This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. How are you doing today, Vivek?
Great, John. Thank you very much for having me.
Hard for me to say Salesforce. I just want to say something else because I identify you with so many other things, but now I got to have this new mental image of you in Salesforce.com. I normally go into a whole long thing of people's backgrounds and everything else, but I think everyone listening pretty much knows your background. Maybe you give us a little thumbshell of your background and maybe some changes in your life in the last couple of months.
Sure. So as you know, over the last decade, I've spent primarily my professional career in the public sector. So I started off as the Director of Infrastructure Technology in Arlington County, Virginia, then went and worked for Governor Tim Kaine as the Assistant Secretary of Commerce and Trade in the state of Virginia, and then as a Chief Technology Officer for Washington, D.C. And recently, I left the post as the U.S. Chief Information Officer working for President Obama. And I left and went to Harvard to reflect on the future and what I wanted to do when I grew up.
You just can't keep a job. You know, you just can't hold a job. And Harvard's not a bad place to start and reflect from. So talk about reflecting. There's so many different topics we consider. When I think about your career with the federal government, I think about, you know, data.gov and apps.gov and 25 points and the dashboard and bang, bang, bang. And all my guests are very, very familiar with this. But rather than going detailed, let's take this big, huge transition that we've seen the last 15 or 20 years. You know, this year, by the end of 2012, there are going to be more mobile devices than humans on the planet. That's incredible. I don't even know what that means. I mean, it's hard to even wrap my little brain around that. Talk about, you know, this whole revolution in technology and from your perspective, how citizens can benefit from it, how people walking down the street can benefit from it.
So, John, that's exactly one of the reasons I joined Salesforce.com. As I was reflecting at my time in Cambridge, I thought a lot about the future of technology and some of the fundamental shifts that were happening. And the conclusion I came to, as you mentioned, with over 7 billion people in the planet and the number of mobile devices that are going to exceed that by the end of this year, coupled with 845 million people on Facebook, over 200 million people on Twitter, there's a huge change in terms of how people are actually using technology, but also in terms of what's happening to governments and companies. Think about what happened with the Arab Spring and countries like Egypt. Think about what happened to Netflix and Bank of America, where a 22-year-old could take on a multi-billion dollar corporation like Bank of America using Twitter. Now, what does this really mean if you're a government agency or if you're, you know, running a city or state? The fundamental shift, the social revolution, is going to change the way you deploy technology. I spent a lot of time over the last decade talking about the shift to cloud. That story is done. It's the past. It's over. The real question now is, what do we do after we've deployed these technologies? What does it mean in the 21st century when people want to interact with their government? And that is a reason I joined Salesforce.com, not because they're in the cloud space, but actually because they're spearheading the social revolution.
I had Dan Burton in the year a couple of years back, and I turned to him and I said, "Hey, Dan, Salesforce.com, that's for like salespeople, right? And customer relationship management. What's that got to do with the federal government?" And then he started going, "Well, one, two, three, four. I was going to beat down after that." But it actually has a lot of applications in the federal government right now.
Well, it's not just the federal government. I just came from Davos, and then I went after that to Australia and Japan. And one of the things you're seeing around the world is that platforms are really, really interesting. For example, Japan is using Salesforce to run its entire postal system. Japan Post all operates on top of that platform. You go to Australia, states like Victoria in Australia are using it for economic development. You look in the United States, the state of Texas is using the platform to actually develop an app store where they're using 25 different applications that are focused on not Salesforce automation, but actually on HR, on looking at performance management, on project management. So it's an enterprise company that's fundamentally transforming the way technology is delivered.
You know, a few years back, you had this famous quote, and I remember it still. The average school kid has better technology than most of us in the federal government here. It's plastered on some wall somewhere, but I'm sure it was true in the past. But now we have people waltzing into offices with mobile devices and iPhones and whatnot. I mean, that quote's got to change, but there's still a lot of frustration there for my federal listeners, isn't there?
And it's the right level of frustration that they should have, right? Because if you think about it, why do we accept this notion that, you know, an 11-year-old in a school bus has better technology than government officials that are managing multi-billion dollar programs and who are managing programs that are critical to the nation? So how do we close this gap? And how did it come to be? Well, the reason is, if you look at the consumer space, there's Darwinian pressure. There's a desire and need to innovate or you become extinct. In government, unfortunately, when most companies win IT contracts, the only innovation that happens is how you make sure that you preserve margins. It's not to provide better service. It's not facing extinction. It's locking in that contract and then over a course of 5 years, figuring out how do you optimize that contract to increase your revenue rather than make sure that you're disrupting and constantly innovating. It's sort of the classical innovator's dilemma. And I think now there's an amazing opportunity to close this technology gap between consumer technology and enterprise. And that's what's really exciting about some of the cool stuff that's happening at Salesforce, which is taking the innovations that are happening with whether it's Facebook or with Twitter or how you look at HR from a social perspective and hardwiring that within the enterprise context.
Speaking of Twitter, Vivek has 7,425 followers and only 27 tweets. So they're pretty. And you mentioned the Australian, I think, the woman there who got promoted or something. I was saying, where this guy is all over the world, isn't he? I mean, he's tweeting people in Australia. So that's kind of fascinating. So you took a little break after your federal government experience and you kind of reflected. And you figured that the organization that would best help you promote this goal of closing the gap between a traditional business and fast-moving industry is a company like Salesforce.
Yes. And the reason that, you know, I came to that conclusion, and it wasn't, you know, by just doing it through sort of a passive manner. I was very, very focused as I met with many technology companies, many venture capitalists all over the world, for that matter. And the conclusion I came to is that what really excited me about my public service career was that I was always challenging the status quo, and I was really, really excited in the interest of the American people. And the same way in the private sector, the last thing I wanted to do was to join a company that was for a paycheck. I wanted to make sure that I was part of a much larger transformation, a fundamental shift. And that cause for me is a social revolution that's going to change the way government delivers services and the private sector delivers services. But what's really exciting about that is that it's about putting the citizen or the customer at the heart of an enterprise's operations rather than focusing on the same old debate of which technology do we buy.
You know, Watergate, they talked about following the money. And then in federal IT, they follow the money, and vendors try to maximize their revenue by throwing bodies at problems. But what you're saying is, hey, don't follow the money, follow the citizen, and don't even follow the technology, follow the end user. What do they want? What is the best fit? Maybe it isn't an iPhone. Maybe it is. I mean, don't follow the money anymore. Follow the end user, the citizen, consumer?
Absolutely. I mean, the era of a few people behind closed doors in Washington having the arrogance to believe that they know better than millions of people is over. I mean, that is the lesson learned with Bank of America, Netflix, Egypt, and I could go on and on about what happens when you stop listening to your customers. And part of what's happening with the social revolution, and the reason I believe that this whole cloud debate is over, is because the deeper question we should be asking is, how do we make sure that the function of government, the sole purpose of government in public service, is about service? It's not about spending taxpayer dollars to procure assets. It's about fundamentally thinking about how you serve citizens of a country.
We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about your Harvard experience and the digital fuel for the 21st century. It's not coffee, and it's not one of those energy drinks either. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com.
Profile America, Tuesday, March 27th. Those who watch weather and natural phenomena are keeping a close eye as things unfold this year. 2011 was unique in terms of the range and strength of events, including huge snowfalls, massive tornado outbreaks, heat waves, hurricanes, and floods. The list was topped by a rare East Coast earthquake in August, the first of its magnitude in over a century. The earthquake, centered in Virginia, registered 5.8 on the Richter scale and was felt from Canada to Georgia. Earthquakes happen all the time, most of them so small the public is unaware of them. In 2010, there were more than 8,400 quakes, most of them in the 2 through 3 range on the Richter scale. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
More than 60% of the world's air traffic is guided by Lockheed Martin systems. To streamline air traffic control, reduce delays, and increase safety, Lockheed Martin has created a world-class data communications team. Our team is comprised of leading experts in air traffic management, telecommunications, and air-to-ground interoperability. Working in harmony with the FAA, we are the right team to orchestrate a symphony of flights from beginning to end. For more information, go to lockheedmartin.com/datacom.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message brought to you by GEICO.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. Well, here's a gentleman in front of me who's made a big change in the federal government. I mean, good, bad, ugly, sad, it's been a big change. It's been a big improvement from my perspective. And I like to look at history, and there's a guy that's an interesting quote, a guy named Augustus. And he said, he found Rome of clay, and he left it to you of marble. So you could almost say the same thing as, hey, I walked in here, and this was kind of a mess, boys and girls. I mean, and you left it with very specific, I mean, we can name them right here, you know, data.gov, apps.gov, TechStat, 25 points, federal, they're almost like four or five major initiatives that are still being felt. So this is really a big change you've been responsible for the federal government. Isn't that true?
John, thanks for the kind words, but I think like anything in life, everything moves towards entropy, towards disorder. So when I wrote about this in my Reflections on Public Service, I talked about how it was really, really important to make sure we put the shoulder to the wheel and continue driving in that direction. And I think Stephen Van Roekel is doing an excellent job. And, you know, it's critical to make sure that given the pace of innovation, there isn't necessarily a point where you can say it's done. It's a journey. And we need to make sure that with every decision that's made in the public sector, it's in favor of innovation in the interest of the people we serve.
One concept I want to talk about, your 25 points. There are two or three points in the talk about software development and agile software development. And I'm a big proponent of agile software development. We've done lots of shows on Scrum, and we talk about agile all the time. And you talk about chunks of software. I kind of think it's interesting, rather than using the Scrum term like a sprint, but you just say chunk. It communicates to the people on the street. You go, hey, come here. This is a chunk. Oh, I got it. You know, I mean, this is another concept that I think that people don't realize is just one innovation is just in preparing software in an agile manner that can be flexible and respond to changing conditions.
And it's critical to do that because the old model was around, you know, people would go back, draw up some grand architecture and design. And I've talked about how in so many meetings and reviews, I would look at these projects. And at the end of the day, you would ask, you know, after 4 years, what did we get? And you get a book, and the book is full of BPR. It's useless, right? Because you can't even implement that. You look at some of these projects that are littered throughout history as failures. The reason is because people are so focused on boiling the ocean rather than iterating and being humble about the fact that they may not know all the answers. And so through agile methodologies, Scrum, right, you're able to get feedback loops that are shorter life cycles, but also much more powerful because it means that the users end up feeling like they are part of the development process. That's critical.
May 2009, data.gov went online. A bunch of data sets were released, more and more. Tell me about data.gov and where you got that concept from. Probably from the DC background, is that right? Point by point how that kind of evolved.
Sure. So when I was in DC government, I looked at government operations and I realized that there was a vast store of data that was there on everything from permitting to contracting to what was happening with crime and education. And we thought about, you know, the traditional IT model in terms of how technology was being developed. So the decision we made was to democratize that data. By releasing that data, what was great about that is you had innovators, citizen innovators, who started looking at this data, analyzing it, but you also had the watchdogs and press starting to write stories based on that information, and the entrepreneurs who started to build applications. So I remember issuing this challenge for $50,000. It was called Apps for Democracy. And within 30 days of launching that competition, what we ended up getting was over 40 applications, everything that ranged from, you know, finding how permits were issued to what was going on in terms of crimes by your neighborhood, by your block, by your zip code, by your address, to looking at applications that would actually allow you to customize your own historical tour. And we ended up saving a lot of money because we realized that this was a new model. So that experiment proved to me that there was a third way in terms of how we could acquire technology, which was to tap into the innovative spirit of the citizenry.
I had some fellows in from Hadoop, and we talked about big data, and we talked about Cloudera and all kinds of things going on out there. And they all, well, scale this, scale that, and scale this. Well, your career has scaled, hasn't it? I mean, it's gone from Arlington to the state of Virginia to D.C. to the federal government. That's scaling right there. It's just amazing that the concepts that were true in small organizations, you could develop and scale them larger. Maybe it's a vision thing, or maybe it's just the concepts that maybe it's the right concept at the right time.
Well, it's the, you know, as many people have said, that states and cities are the laboratories of democracy, where you can start small, scale super fast, right? And I think what you're seeing, going back to sort of the agile methodologies, is that across the country, what's happened is you're seeing innovation being unleashed. So even as part of this sort of social revolution, we're seeing what happens at the local level, whether it's in New York City or what's going on in states like Colorado. Some amazing stuff is happening. And the key is to find the best ideas and scale them as fast as humanly possible.
I picked up a magazine this morning preparing for the interview. It was Network World, and I have a big wanted poster in here. It's a, you know, federal government guy, Uncle Sam, saying, "I want you for the open source app contest." And I said, "Well, this has got Vivek Kundra written all over it here, doesn't it?" I'll have to ask him about this. They're coming up. It was just exactly what you said. What they have here is they have $100,000, $10,000 for certain apps that are coming up. And it seems like challenges and contests will motivate people quicker than forcing them to work 40 hours a week, or I don't know. It's just different types of motivation here, isn't there?
And we've seen that. So once we did this competition, by the way, in D.C., we scaled it at the White House. It was amazing to see how quickly it spread. You had New York City, you had the state of California, you had, you know, countries like the UK, the World Bank, for that matter, started running these competitions. What's amazing about that is all of a sudden you could tap into this global community. And the power of that is the same power that I was referring to in terms of being able to crowdsource and being able to tap into these global social networks to solve some of the most difficult problems a government faces, or for that matter, the private sector faces. And on the positive end, as far as Netflix is concerned, I talked about some of the challenges, was what they did in terms of their XPRIZE, a competition to optimize their algorithm for picking movies. And they ended up with a much better solution than what their own engineers came up with when they did this competition.
Which brings us back to measuring value. With agile software development, people critique it and go, "Well, we can't just start and stop and meet once a week and pivot and move all the time. We want to start with A and end with Z and 1, 2, 3. Well, it's difficult to take a concept like data.gov or apps.gov and say, "Well, here are the metrics we're going to use to measure it." There are different technologies and different metrics for this, aren't there?
Well, for phase one of data.gov, what we did is we measured the metric was the number of data sets, right? So in May of 2009, it started with 47 data sets. And today it has over 400,000 data sets. So the pivot now has to be a different set of metrics. The metric can't be the number of data sets, but it's got to be the quality of the data sets and the applications that are built on top of that. That is the beauty with Agile. As the technology or the program evolves, you can pivot in terms of metrics that actually make sense and add value as you go along. Whereas if you look at the traditional sort of waterfall approach, you're putting people in a position where they have to imagine and think about, well, what is the right metrics, metric 5 to 10 years from now? They physically won't be able to do that. And if they do, they're making that stuff up.
And that's one of the challenges, I think, with changes and more flexible software development, changing to cloud-based solutions. It's forcing people who have maybe a rigid way of making acquisition, it just forces them to be more flexible, and that can be uncomfortable.
Well, it's it can also be extremely comfortable, because what they don't have to do now is spend an inordinate amount of time and resources on things that have already been solved or have been abstracted. So instead of going out there and spending all your energy and resources on infrastructure, they can actually abstract away from that level of work and figure out what is it that my customer really wants.
I have to take a quick break. We come back, talk more about the cloud and technology. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com.
Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Here's Elaine Cummins, Chief Information Sharing Officer at the FBI, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by the FCA Homeland Security Conference.
I hope that the vision would be a time coming in the future in which information sharing is just routine, it's quick, it's seamless, it's easy, it's inexpensive. It's just a normal part of our lives.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join FCA for the first of its TechNet Land Forces conference series. Recently evolved from the annual Land War Net conference, these events will provide a forum for all services to discuss operational issues. The Southwest Conference, being held March 27th through 29th in Tucson, will focus on training tomorrow's cyber warriors, mobile communications on the battlefield, and defending the cyberspace. Register to attend or exhibit at www.technetlandforces.org. That's technetlandforces.org. Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Army is starting to consider a bring-your-own-device strategy for mobile technology. The service will release a broad agency announcement soon, asking industry for some ideas on how to let a wide range of consumer mobile devices access Army data securely. Policymakers in the Army CIO's office say DoD's approval processes just can't keep up with the pace of mobile innovation. They're looking for an alternative approach, including a potential successor to the military's Common Access Card.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Insects use tiny hairs to help them climb smooth walls. The gecko lizard does the same thing with a lot more weight. That has engineers intrigued. Gecko toes have unique hair-like structures that are soft enough to conform to a surface but are attached to tendons stiff enough to support weight, while they easily stick and unstick to a wall.
It's a really novel set of properties from the perspective of engineers.
Al Crosby of the University of Massachusetts has mimicked that with a reusable rubber-coated fabric engineered to have an easily reversible yet very strong adhesiveness.
You can hold up to 700 pounds, and then with a little flip of the wrist, you can take it off with virtually no effort.
Crosby says the new tape can hold a flat-screen TV on your wall for at least as long as a ball game and not leave a mark when you take it down. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Washington Walks is a guided walking tour company that offers not only special cherry blossom strolls this time of year, but really interesting walks around Washington throughout the year. Washington Walks has actually added some dates for tours because of the earlier blossoms, and those tours are going to be March the 24th and March the 31st and April the 7th. Those are all Saturdays, and they take place at 2 p.m. Find out more about all of this at WashingtonWalks.com.
What if I'd rather stretch my legs by running?
You might want to head down to Chesapeake, Virginia, April the 14th for the Great Dismal Swamp Stomp. This is a half-marathon race along the scenic Dismal Swamp Canal Trail. That is along the Virginia-North Carolina border on the eastern edge of the state. Find out more on page 25 of the March Recreation News or at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. He's gone from Davos to D.C. just for this interview. Is that right, Vivek? Yeah. And everything in between, you know, Australia's in between there, huh?
Yeah, well, when I started, I basically went and traveled around the world. So I spent time in Davos looking at, you know, what was going on as far as the context of the global economy. I had the opportunity to meet with many heads of states, opportunity to sit down with the folks who are leading transformations when it comes to the economy, thinking about the future of Europe, what needs to happen with Greece. And what was really fascinating in Davos was the spirit amongst those who were talking about the future of capitalism and thinking about the reforms that needed to happen versus the spirit of the entrepreneurs who are imagining a brighter future, who are actually creating and powering that future. And what I realized was that there was this amazing transformation that was happening where a lot of these leaders around the world were looking at the social platforms and trying to decide, well, what does this really mean? What happens when people can self-organize in a matter of seconds? What does this mean for not just economies, but governance? And the realization I walked out of there with was the power of this transformation. How do we make sure that the government is transforming itself for the social era? And my time in Japan, I was super excited to see what was happening in Japan as far as institutions like Japan Post that had fundamentally shifted to the cloud, but also thinking about how they're going to serve their constituents, 120 million people using social technologies. In Australia, what was amazing was the investments that they're making in infrastructure. They're making a $37 billion investment in running fiber to people's homes. It's just 22 million citizens. But what was really interesting about that was it wasn't about the infrastructure. It was about how do you fundamentally re-engineer government operations on top of that infrastructure. How do you think of a country that's going to be connected to the global economy with 22 million people that are going to be able to tap in and compete? So we live in these exciting times, as you've mentioned, you know, with the number of mobile devices that are going to outnumber the number of people on the planet. It's a really, really interesting time to be living in. And I think from a transformation perspective, we're going to look back at this era and reflect on how profound it was.
You know, go back to Augustus and Rome. They built roads, didn't they? And the roads had all kinds of implications for the history for the last 2,000 years. Speaking of social networks, I have a blog called the Tech Tuesday blog. I'll be writing about this interview. You don't have a specific blog, but we do have an event coming up in April. Is that right? April 25th, there's an event coming up. What's coming up, Vivek?
Right, so April 25th is going to be CloudForce DC at the Washington Convention Center. At that event, I'll talk a lot more about the implications of the social revolution when it comes to institutions, whether they're governments or the private sector, and a number of other people from Salesforce will be there. It's a free event. It's going to be an exciting time for us, and I'll have a lot more to say about what this means in terms of governance.
And the keyword in my blog should be free. I'll get all more hits then, huh? Because free is not a four-letter word on Federal News Radio. A lot of my listeners are maybe putting their little finger in the bathtub wanting to jump in, and they could come to this conference, sit in the back room, and see what you have to say, maybe see if it's of value. And I think that's the whole thing. If it is of value, then pursue it. If it's not of value, well, then, you know, knock on someone else's door. I mean, I think that's the whole idea behind Salesforce.com. I mean, there's no strong-arm tactics here. It's like, well, this may be the right solution for you. Maybe it is. And I think cloud, okay, private cloud, public cloud, high. Well, maybe it's no cloud's a solution, but I think you have to be comfortable and fluent with different options before you can make that type of a choice. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about apps.gov and what your thinking was behind that.
Well, the thinking behind apps.gov was to lower the friction in terms of procuring technology. Because if you looked at the duplication across the federal government, and what's even compounded further is what happens at the state and local level when agencies have the need for an application, but then it's multiplied, right, with hundreds of agencies, or 50 states all have the same unemployment insurance, Medicare, Medicaid application. then there are about 4,000 counties which end up having the same permitting system 4,000 times. Well, I think there's some really innovative things happening in that space, but Texas is a great example, and I'm heading out there later this week to look at, well, how does a state like Texas leverage platform solutions where you can have one agency share innovation from another agency? That was sort of the philosophy behind the apps.gov movement.
University of Texas is a leader in many areas. I'm surprised how innovative is an area of healthcare IT. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in Texas. I'm always surprised by that university system. You know, it's kind of adapted to the whole world of social and IT very well. When you came up with data.gov and apps.gov, where did you see it heading? What kind of future do you think it was going to have? I mean, did you predict that kind of success, the number of data sets to be up there now? I mean, incredible number of data sets now. Did you predict that initially, or just kind of a retentive, say, well, let's toss this up, see what happens?
Well, I didn't know what would happen with data.gov. I would have never imagined, right, at that point when we started with 47 data sets in May of 2009, that we would end up having the World Bank and other countries, including Australia and Japan, by the way, that have implemented a data.gov platform, that they would be replicating it. And we would end up with a data.gov in a box, which other countries could start implementing across the board. But that is the whole power when I talk about the social revolution, is that it's a shift in power, right? So even though we put up this platform, the people who are implementing it ended up being, you know, on the other end of the world who are looking at this and saying, huh, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe we should scale it, as you mentioned. And you end up getting these organic movements that are beyond the control of anybody. So you think about this, you know, I doubt the 22-year-old who tweeted about Bank of America fees knew that she was going to change the policy of a multi-billion dollar bank by that single tweet.
Well, data.gov, pretty simple, easy to figure out. I could figure that out. Apps.gov, well, I could probably figure that out. Never done before you. I mean, you walked on the scene and said, hey, let's do it. Why you?
I think I came into the job with a beginner's mind. And frankly, one of the greatest assets I brought to the job was my naivete. Right. So when I came into the federal government,
I'm very naive.
Well, no, but when I came into the federal government, you know, I didn't come in there, you know, with a set of strong-held views on how IT should be, because that's the way it was done for the last 30 years. I came into it and I asked simple questions, which is, well, if we're spending, you know, $1 billion in an IT project and it doesn't work, why aren't we killing it? I came in asking, well, wait a second, the American people have a right to know what we're doing when we're spending $80 billion. I actually have a funny story for you. I remember my first hearing, I was sitting before Senator Carper, and he asked me a similar question as you did. He said, so, Mr. Kundra, what are you going to do to change federal IT? And I looked at him and I said, Senator, I'm actually going to launch an IT dashboard, and we're going to put, you know, the performance of every IT project online. You can see costs, schedule, how we're doing on this performance metrics, and we're going to do it in 60 days. And my team started throwing stuff at me, essentially. And they said, are you crazy? Nothing in the federal government gets done in 60 days.
Yeah.
And I looked at them and I said, look, I've testified under oath. I've made a commitment to the senator. We're going to make this happen. So I literally, you know, after my day job, essentially we would, from 7 p.m. to midnight, with developers, we'd sit down, we put together the IT dashboard, we launched it in 58 days, and I took the picture of every CIO, and many of them were not happy with me, and we put it online, and we had an amazing response, right? We also put the names of companies that were running these IT projects.
Dirty laundry is what I see here.
But
this is not
government
good.
Government operating in a transparent, open, and participatory way. And we asked people to give us feedback on these projects. And what was really, really cool about that whole experience was we actually saw direct savings. We ended up saving $3 billion in 6 months by going after those IT projects that were behind schedule or way over budget.
Have to take a quick break. We'll come back, talk more about naivete and success. Maybe there's a, you know, they're both of them together. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com.
How is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, NGA, putting the power of geospatial intelligence in the hands of its users? How does NGA support disaster rescue, homeland security, and war fighter operations? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Letitia Long, Director, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I join the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Caps fans, don't miss two big upcoming matchups at Verizon Center against the Buffalo Sabres on Tuesday, March 27th, and the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday, March 31st, as the Capitals continue their drive for the playoffs, powered by Constellation Energy. The Caps look to pick up valuable points to secure an Eastern Conference playoff spot. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped up, always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Sharon Snow, CEO of Metropolitan Capital Strategies. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, and serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Want to take your career to the next level? Today, there is an enormous demand for professionals who can contribute to evidence-based policy decisions. The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics will give you the expertise in public policy analysis, quantitative research, and economic modeling. Evening classes will be held in the Ronald Reagan Building at the Federal Triangle Metro stop. Earn your Master's in Applied Economics from the University of Maryland. Learn more at masters.econ.umd.edu.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today I have Vivek Kundra in the studio. He is the Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. And I sure want to say something different, but I'll have to wrap my mouth around that title. Twitter feeds. You've got a Twitter feed. I follow it. I have a Twitter feed. My name, you can follow me at Ray Gilray, so you can come up with new topics, and it'll point out to interviews that you've given and the Fortune magazine interview and all kinds of strange tweets from people in Australia, which is kind of fascinating. A lot of people listen to my show, and they go, well, I wonder if that Vivek really is a nerd. Is he a card-carrying nerd or not? Is he just making this all up? So I have a scientific test I give to everyone, and I'll give it to you real quick here. We'll see what kind of credentials you really have. Year of your first computer. When did you buy your first computer?
It was probably in 1987, and my sister actually got it for me as a gift.
Oh, because you're pretty sister. Young, yeah. Year of your first cell phone?
Boy, that was probably in 1995.
That's
when I could finally afford one.
Yeah. Now, you have a good excuse. You can't say I resisted it. I was in high school. John, give me a break.
No, it was a big cell phone. Yeah. I still remember. But that was, by the way, after I got that, I haven't had a landline since then.
Oh, I thought you would say, no one beat me up because I carried around every day. I got real big arms. I know you have a Twitter feed. No blog, so you lose points with that. What kind of online personal backup do you use?
Well, in terms of online, I don't actually use online backup because I literally live in the cloud, so to speak.
Okay, well, you live in the backup world. What kind of a smartphone do you have?
I've got an iPhone, I've got a BlackBerry, you know, I've got multiple versions of the iPhone, so I try to be device agnostic.
Oh, and how many apps do you have on your iPhone?
Oh, God, probably at least 75.
75, that's reasonable. Tablet device?
I've got my iPad here. And I've got actually also multiple versions. I end up buying every new generation, and I can't wait to get the new one.
Oh, great. And social networking sites you participate in?
So I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Tumblr.
And the deal breaker, the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Oh, electronic.
Oh, electronic. Well, I'll put that through the UNIVAC, and we'll find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or just a geek or maybe even a Luddite. That would be terrible if we had that. Let's go back to... big innovations you came up with. 15 points is kind of interesting. 25 points is interesting. All kinds of concepts here. Data.gov, apps.gov. Where do you think these projects are going to head? I mean, people are talking about funding in the next couple of years, maybe pull back to funding for some of these initiatives. What do you think is going to happen to them?
Well, I think if you look at data.gov, and this is a lot of the work I actually did when I was in Harvard, really focused about looking at what I call digital fuel of the 21st century. You look at, you know, other countries that have taken the data.gov concept and have begun to scale it. So you've got this amazing race to the top to democratize all this data. But we also have to realize that... there are users that are not going to allow for the data.gov platform, any of these platforms, to disappear. Because my view is that transparency is a one-way street. Can you imagine future administrations that are going to run on the platform of less transparency? And then you've got applications.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a great campaign. And you also look at applications that have been built on top of these platforms, which is really exciting. So you actually have businesses that are making money off of these platforms. And then lastly, you've got good government groups, watchdogs, who actually use this information to hold their government accountable. So I don't see any of these platforms actually disappearing. I see them accelerating in the future and even resources shifting in terms of how agencies are going to be procuring future IT.
Number of data centers have been drastically reduced. And I was at a presentation a few weeks back where a person was up there and he's had a graph of, look, if the IT spending were to progress, it would go up to this point. But what's happened is it's actually it's actually tapered off. It hasn't progressed like it usually should. I mean, we all know our math and regular progression would go to a certain level, but it hasn't. It's kind of tapered off. And some people can point at a person named Vivek Kundra and say, right there, that's the Vivek point. That's the tipping point right there. It looks like it stopped growing as fast as before. And maybe it's because it's a reduction number of data centers. Maybe it's because it's reducing duplicate services.
Absolutely. And I think it's also this shift where, you know, agencies are not putting up with a status quo, with the same old way of buying IT. And you've got a number of great leaders in government who just needed their energies and their spirits to be unleashed, to be able to go out there and start thinking differently and taking, you know, calculated risks where before they couldn't. Because people believed in a certain dogma in terms of how you needed to deploy IT. What's going to be really exciting is actually how that fundamentally changes a citizen experience. Because at the end of the day, all those dollars are about how you service citizens and how each agency puts the American citizen at the center of their operations.
If I were to fly to Kansas City and try to describe the federal government to someone in a gas station there or a classroom or something, it'd be very difficult to explain what your position was, because you were kind of like a chief influencer. I mean, you had, you know, you were a leader and you had to use moral suasion to get people to change. I mean, it's a funny little position to be in where you're up in front of everyone and you have to make the right decisions. And if you make a commitment for 60 days, I'm sure people were marking on the calendar. They're saying, oh, here's Vivek, 60 days. Let's see who's going to live. So it was a difficult spot to be in, wasn't it?
I think it was one of the best jobs I ever had. And, you know, when I reflect across my career, I'm humbled and honored that I've had the pleasure of serving a mayor, a governor, and the president of a country. And, you know, as I reflect on that, I think it's going to be one of the best experiences of my life. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute of it because I knew what True North was. And I never deviated from True North, which was recognizing that, you know, everything we do, we needed to be able to do for in the interest of taxpayers, not in the interest of companies that were working for the federal government, not in the interest of, you know, government employees who may be uncomfortable because of change, but it was understanding what my duty was. And the president was central in making sure that we were changing the way Washington works.
If you were to sit down in front of a group of IT computer science majors at UVA and suggest what would you have them study? I mean, in addition to, I mean, you have a background in technology. What would you have them study to be successful in the future world of technology?
Well, I would say the biggest trend that they should be focused on right now is social, mobile, and open, right? Because if you think about where the world is headed and jobs of the future, that's where they're going to be. A lot of the other stuff is just getting commoditized. It's going to be commodity IT, right? When you're looking at abstracting away from infrastructure and so forth. I mean, think about what's going on in Silicon Valley. You've got companies that are built on top of cloud solutions, such as, you know, whether it's Netflix, right? Or whether you look at Tumblr in New York. And the reason they can actually operate and run these companies is because they're able to abstract. You look at countries like Japan that are kind of abstracting away in terms of running their own postal services the old way and are saying, you know, our focus needs to be how we do a better job servicing our citizens rather than actually focusing on this sort of tired old model of throwing more money after infrastructure.
It's going to be a strange new world in 15 years. I'm looking forward to seeing what your child has to come up with here in the next few years as far as managing all this data. I have to take a quick break now. It's been a great interview. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Vivek Kundra, Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. Thank you, Vivek.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.